But there, of course, there's a bit of technicalities involved. So what is
Pi noon.
It's pi afternoon, yes. Pi noon. It's not a pi, it's not a pi day.
Is that like high noon?
Was supposed to be high noon, yeah. So what is quantum space-time? And again, it's really kind of this, a traditional approach. And so since apparently 100 years and one day, if you happen to be in Berlin, you would know that space-time and gravity have something to do with geometry. So to answer this question, we will basically try to actually answer, what is quantum geometry and what is space-time quantum geometry. Yeah, since I'm from Berlin, I have to basically follow these traditions. And it's actually that here, I basically tell you it's just three things which we need. But the last thing is incredibly difficult to get because it includes the answer to everything already. So we will see that. So the first thing is we need geometry. So basically, I have here a bit more generalized setup. If you are more traditional, you can just imagine that you have two hypersurfaces. So we will have a boundary, so we will have space-time regions. We usually forget about these space-time regions, but the important thing is that we have these boundaries, and what is encoded on the boundaries is geometry and matter, which happens here to be always in brackets because it's not the main point, unfortunately, yet, but it will come up at some point. So we have these things with boundary data, and we want to have a boundary quantum theory, and that means actually that we kind of need to have states depending on these boundary data, and more technically or more generally, a Hilbert space representation. And you need two things. You want to have two things. First, you speak of geometry, which means that actually it should be invariant under coordinate under your choice of coordinates. It's already kind of non-trivial, and if I speak about diffeomorphism invariant, means diffeomorphism invariant vacuum, so it's not quite correct. But anyway, it understands this as diffeomorphism invariant vacuum, Hilbert space representation, and we need to have access to the geometry. So what that actually means is to have Hilbert space representation of our geometric observables. Okay, and matter and everything else. So that was the first thing. B, that's basically the partition function. That actually means a functional Z, which depends on these boundary data. And this partition function is basically the partition function with boundary or transition amplitude, so basically the same thing that Neil defined. If you just split these two boundaries into this is one boundary into two boundaries, and then it's basically the transition amplitudes. In this form, it's also vacuum wave function, so that's basically everything encoded here. And the first thing what we want is to regain classical gravity. So in a certain limit, in this classical limit, we want that this partition function independent as a function of these boundary data gives us the semi-correct semi-classical limit. Okay. And that's the last thing. So that's actually the gluing property. That is the following thing. If you imagine that you take two regions, so which means you take the set as of these two regions, you glue them along a certain part of the boundary, which means that you integrate over part of the boundary data. This is funny thing, this is measure, which somehow is encoded in the Hilbert space and data and so on. Then you want actually to have the same thing back. You want to have the same Z back. And this seems to be kind of a simple equation to state, but this equation encodes everything. And it's basically a bit, it's kind of a more bootstrap approach because traditionally, for instance, so it encodes really everything. And what I mean with one of these examples is really that this would encode space-time diffeomorphism symmetry. the dynamics and the so-called Hamiltonian constraints, which I explain in a minute, and also the normalization flow equations. So that's why it's not easy to get this Z a priori. And if you had me, so for the experts, it's actually also encoding this thing, but let's forget about that for the moment. So I'll try to explain these two things, dynamics and Hamiltonian constraints and the renormalization flow equation. And for the dynamics and the Hamiltonian constraints is that actually for a long time, or that's what people still try, is to do it the other way around, to first actually, for instance, define the Hamiltonian constraints. They actually have to satisfy very complicated consistency conditions. And this is already the place where things never really worked. So actually, here the lesson is that once you have the Z, you actually do get the consistent Hamiltonian constraints, just that you have basically to build that everything at the same time. So in this sense, it's a bootstrap approach. So here maybe we are more in this picture of time evolution. If you see this is one boundary and this is another piece of boundary, then kind of a gluing property is really that, for instance, you can take a very, you know, imagine you glue just this very small part of the boundary data here, that you basically push forward the hypersurface a bit here. and if you again write down what this gluing property means, is, okay, you take basically this magic partition function Z, you integrate over these common boundary data, you get the same Z back, Z AB. And in fact, this operation of doing this little gluing here, this is the Hamiltonian constraint operator. And basically, this thing would be kind of the projection operator or path integral. And indeed, if you can geometrically play around with these things and the Hamiltonian constraint algebra, this very complicated consistency conditions, which traditionally understood to encode diffeomorphism symmetry, follow from the geometry of these hypersurface embeddings. It's an old argument by Teitelboim, who is now Bahnstad or something. so this was basically that this equation indeed encodes the dynamics and the Hamiltonian constraints. Another example is renormalization flow, where let's assume that we actually have matter plus geometry, and the geometry is in a state where it's basically almost classical. So the boundary data have these two parts. And now you can actually go on and like in say lattice theory, you glue four regions or four boundaries. And if your matters, if your geometries, basically degrees of freedom are almost frozen out, it means that if you glue the integral, the path integral will be concentrated on basically these geometries where the lattice length is determined by the boundary length, which is a little lie. There's a bit of gauge fixing involved. So that now you are more in a traditional picture of having this partition function for just the matter sector. But you again get this equation that basically gluing parts of your partition function, you get the bigger partition function. So we get basically the Wilsonian renormalization flow, which means that that indeed already has a solution for all the beta functions and so on. And then that also means that in the Hamiltonian, we have all the beta functions because you need to indeed write down all things coupled to the geometric background, which can have arbitrary value. so do we have A, B, and C? And if you don't have it, how can we get it? And A, we are quite fine, but if you think about it, it's actually quite recent because at least that kind of this has been formulated the first time was in the 90s. so with the construction of the first diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space representation for geometric observables by Aschika, Lewandowski, and Eichem in the 90s. It's very peculiar, but it really comes from formulating or demanding this diffeomorphism invariant vacuum. So it's based on a vacuum, which actually describes you nothing. So it's a state which is peaked on having zero spatial geometry. And then you act with these operators, and they create you the geometry. But you can imagine that you have a very hard job to get to something which is kind of really bigger, I mean, kind of a tightly woven geometry in a sense. and in fact, there have been people looked for other representation because it was an awful thing to work with, and it still is, to get semi-classical physics, which resulted in a uniqueness theorem, saying that this is the only representation satisfying certain assumptions. However, actually, you can avoid one of these assumptions, or you can skip one of these assumptions, and you find another representation, which seems to be actually more convenient and also more adjusted to the covariant picture. And we're basically currently working on yet different representations. The point of finding different representations is, if you have a very convenient representation, it makes the second job, which is finding C, much easier. So it's basically that's why we are looking for different representations. Yeah.
What is your attitude towards topological field? Does topological field theory satisfy A, B, and C?
Yeah, that's what's coming. So it turns out that basically the construction principle here indeed is that all these Hilbert spaces, all these representations are basically topological quantum field theories, actually mathematically so-called extended topological quantum field theories. So topological quantum field theory is not so much information, you have only very few degrees of freedom. So I have to allow actually something in addition. This in addition are defects. And the point is, why is that the only thing we know so far? Defects are usually living on some lower dimensional things. And these can be easily moved around with the diffeomorphisms. So it's very straightforward to define an action of the diffeomorphism group on these defects. Whereas it's very hard actually to define an action on a diffeomorphism group on something like a smooth distribution of things. Actually, that's the reason why we have these structures. And so basically, there are two questions which are of interest, at least to me, and I guess also some other people in general, because it's kind of condensed matter and mathematics, which is that are there any other geometrically interesting TQFTs, and here in particular in four dimensions, beyond the one which we are very used to, which is kind of something which is called a BF theory. And the other question is, So the construction with TQFTs and defects is actually something which people don't like very much, because that's quite different from what people are used to. And at least on a certain level, you get non-separable Hilbert spaces and so on. So it's actually very, it's very far away from some kind of smooth picture, because we have defects. And so there's indeed the question, is there any other construction principle to build diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert spaces? And that's a very open question. okay, so basically the answer to R is A is that we do have A, we have ideas, we have examples. Would be good to get a kind of full quantization, classification of all the possibilities. B, do we have a partition function? Yes, indeed, we have proposals. And we have spinform models, which give us, on the first level, they give us basically the partition function for very simple boundary data. That's something to start with. And indeed, lots of people involved, and also Laurent, you can show that it satisfies the semi-classicality condition, which looks here quite simple, but it's actually lots of work, because you start with lots of abstract things. And the idea is to get that for more complicated boundary data is to glue these basic building blocks, the basic partition functions for these simple boundary data together to get to more complicated boundary data. Okay, so you do that, you know, you imagine I don't know if you do it in 3 plus 1, you take a tube of this funny boundary there. And you, in principle, get this partition function. And it works extremely nicely for 3D, where you can prove that everything is consistent. And one thing is to prove that everything is consistent is actually that the result should not depend on how you glue things together. And of course, it works here consistent because indeed it's a TQ of T, and the conditions I have written you down in this one equation on central equations, basically a TQ of T equation. And 4D, for the models we have, the results depend on the choice of bulk triangulation, and so they also don't really exactly satisfy the gluing property. but still, let's maybe work with this thing which we have, and assume it gives us an approximation to the true partition function. And the point is that this approximation can be improved in a coarse graining process, and in fact, the condition we want to satisfy at the same time gives us actually the iterative equation, which defines kind of the coarse graining process. And so that's really that we take lots of Zs and glue them together to get to basically simple boundary data, which are now better refined. And this gives you actually new Z, which you can take again to build the same gluing. And it's actually very similar to tensor network stuff, just that it's drawn here in a very different way. The point is that here you get a fixed point of you hope that you get a fixed point of your iteration process, and that gives you improved amplitudes, which then you can take again to start this iteration process. so basically, that is giving you everything. So it's a bit hard to imagine that it's easy to compute, and the question is, can you kind of compute it in some approximation scheme or in some truncation scheme? That's always the question. And here, there's basically an indication that indeed what should happen if you choose your kind of boundary Hilbert space in a clever way is that it should be easy to basically get the answers for low complexity boundary data. So actually, cosmology should be easier. That's what actually Neil showed, because that was kind of a very homogeneous situation, and that's why we are also interested in getting homogeneous kind of vacuum describing homogeneous data. and you can check. You can actually take part of this homogeneous, this low complexity stuff, and you can go through your iteration process, and you can check how much the answer differs from the thing you have. So basically, the idea is to slowly build up to more and more complexity things, to more and more complex boundary data to build your partition function. Of course, there's basically a question how much you can say about the existence of the entire family yet. This entire family would correspond to a complete renormalization trajectory, giving you the full information of everything. And basically also all the beta functions and so on. but basically that's the idea. And indeed the hope is because we started with a theory where indeed at least something like the large scale or low complexity stuff, we know that it gives us classical limit. So what we indeed start is more like the infrared, and we're trying to construct with this procedure the UV completion. But the separation between infrared and UV is not straightforward. It's really more that these things are replaced by this thing of having more and more complex boundary data. And And if you have this consistent stuff, this defines your notion of quantum spacetime. And the question is if it exists, so thank you.
Do we get the continuum limit a priori? No.
No, the No, this is basically the slide. The continuum limit is this is basically the continuum limit, you know.
Well, this is what you would like to get, but do we get it? Do you get it if you start putting simplices? Because a priori gravity.
Are you asking the question whether if I take the Fourier spin for models, yeah, I can tell you, I don't know.
That's something like this.
The same one is that if you have the continuum, then you have common gravity.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
I think a theory of common gravity is, if you claim you have a theory of common gravity, you claim you have the continuum in the distribution. So whoever is claiming to have a theory of common gravity.
Well, that's assuming gravity is discrete and comes from some lattice.
It
and so on, which
no, I'm not saying that. Yeah.
She says anything about regions and non-related. It has nothing to do with discrete.
So the idea of is moving away from.
This is any theory of common gravity. Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to take discrete building blocks. Mm-hmm.
If you think the CFT is a theory of common gravity, then in some sense.
I mean, you can
you can
start with your previous, with your favorite description of A, for instance, you know. And it would be interesting to see that if you have any idea of what could be a diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space, or even not diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space, but tell me how you get then to diffeomorphism invariant information. And I'm just saying that this is this process which, you know, in my view, would define you.
Can you say a few words to connect to things I know about ADS?
So, yeah, I mean, we have this recent paper, which is not really about ADS, but doesn't really matter. So, indeed, the question, I mean, if you think of this as an ADS boundary, mm-hmm. then if you only ask about ADS CFT, you define the partition functions for a very specific class of boundary data.
And I start to ask questions with more and more detail.
With more and more detail. But it's still very specific boundary data because you put somehow this asymptotic stuff. And I'm not sure whether I'm happy, but we are kind of looking into this question, like, how much can you generalize it to finite boundaries, for instance? You know, how much, I mean, do dual theories exist? And what do they tell me? But so what is here more that this is the belief, or maybe the naive belief that can you do something also for kind of boundaries describing finite regions? No, that's a so it's a bit in this way more ambitious. So basically, I have left this a bit open. So these pictures are more kind of attached to Euclidean signature because kind of it's easier, but it's the same question you can ask. You can also put Lorentzian signature. We have Lorentzian spin forms. And then the question is whether really you can demand all this very general gluing. I think that's a question which is hard to answer because the null hypersurfaces could be very special, and it's a bit hard to see that. But you can write all these conditions just with the gluing of kind of on spatial hypersurfaces. but they're coming with these Lorentzian spin forms. Usually there are lots of more non-trivial features, which is that there are some sectors which actually describe Euclidean spacetimes and so on. So there are much more questions coming up there, which are interesting, have something to do with signature change, but which are hard to answer at this stage. I want to get GR. So one of the conditions first is you have the semi-classical limit. That was one of the conditions. The other condition, equation C, is that you have full diffeomorphism invariance, in a sense, at the quantum level, you know. And okay, there's basically uniqueness theorems. Basically, if you have geometry, if you have diffeomorphism invariance, you have GR. So that's basically the question how much you need this condition on the semi-classicality of these theories. So the main question is here that we know that we can satisfy these things for TQ of T. And the main question is, can we get the same kind of condition for a theory with propagating degrees of freedom and it would be a completely new kind of QFT. And I don't know the answer, so there might be reasons which are against that. But
to Petra's question, uh-huh. I mean, with ADS, as you emphasized, it's a very special boundary geometry. Uh-huh. So now, if I try to see, have I learned anything about the composition rule?
In ADS?
From what I know from ADS. Basically,
okay, I don't know much about EDS, but it's clearly that you can only consider
one boundary. And now I'm trying to join
you can
geometries to get your rules C.
Yeah, you can do the cylinder thing, but not the local thing. So that's a bit.
Oh, you can do EDS with two boundaries. Does it teach you anything about the composition?
Well, in fact, what I wanted to say that there was very nice about the picture. In some sense, it clearly shows. You know that the complete really a common thing, and what divides us is really what we think is a simple summing. So whether it's ADS, spin foam, or cosmology. So in all cases, you know, if you're ADS, if you believe that you know the answer for what is this infinite boundary, and then I guess the composition rule is going to be the renormalization rule that flows inside, which that's. So the challenge that Bianca is doing,
but it's so restrictive.
It's one case.
You're only allowed to join another geometry on the end, which is also.
So that's a side case of
okay. Yeah, you can see that as a gluing of annular things.
Annular geometry.
Which would be this? Yeah. So this is the normalization flow.
So that's, in cosmology, since you start with the homogeneity, and then you're trying the complication, then with the homogeneity, you go to spin from inhomogeneity. Spin form, you start somehow from the other end of ADS, you start from the big block, which is quasi flat there. And then, you try to go. But it's, they are, most the same. They're like three corners of the same thing. And of course, sometimes we're all going to try.
So yeah, that's kind of an attempt to put it in a very general axiom. What do we want to reach?
Of course, we believe that there's different corners which are simple. It doesn't mean that at some point we have to merge and join. I think homogeneity as coming out of this and ADS as finding a way. I have no idea how ADS will finally find a way to do finite regions. That's your question. Yes. Hopefully, it's a theoretical.
There are certainly imagine a situation of a negative topological constant and a finite boundary, and discuss the kind of holographic duality of a finite boundary and a negative topological constant. And we've studied boundary conditions that would be appropriate for that, and then consider the limit in which the boundary goes to infinity and ultimate correspondence with other work on ABS-CFT. And there have been some thoughts and some papers about that over.
And so what you mentioned that what's kind of interesting and confusing is that this notion of simple seems to defy, whether it's UV or IR, which is simple. Like in the cosmological example, it's really the whole universe which is simple. Whereas if you think of physics, one of you, usually it's the vertex which is simple. Like it's the smallest building block. So, this is why there's this wide direction.
So the simplicity
is also respecting UV IR.
And it is also built inside the Hilbert space representation, which is based on very different vacua, where this vacua basically encodes with which state you are starting with, and where you can actually go to.
So does the representation you introduce have any natural analog in the CFT or? Cosmology or in these other settings, can you say something about
mesh
representations and useful ones?
Yeah, in 3D, this basically already the solution to the problem. So basically, for 2 plus 1, okay, in the flat, the thing which we did now was for the flat context, it gives you the answer. And what we are doing now is to put the cosmological constant, which would then provide you the answer. And so indeed, you can.
In
It's 3D. I mean, in 4D, there's a bit of subtle thing. It's kind of half telling you the truth and half lying. But indeed, it's then much easier to put boundary conditions, which would correspond to kind of some kind of flatness condition at infinity. But I mean, that's a bit, there are a lot of subtle things, and indeed, like, it's part of a problem that infinity a priori means infinitely many data, infinitely many degrees of freedom, and you know how to specify that. And this calculation we did in the context, that's why we did it with finite boundary, and to take kind of the limit in the end. But in fact, it's much more reasonable to start with these things and 2+1 and 3+1 and 3+1. And there's a subtle issue that kind of putting the right vacuum might require already kind of the solution to the problem, which I usually find that I want to solve one problem, and then it turns out that it's basically always finding the full solution, like, which has something to do with the full simplicity constraints and so on. That is already kind of putting the full dynamics in there.
But maybe to some extent, when you propose, is maybe more closer in spirit to saying what the simple vector is, like it's called homogeneous.
It's homogeneous, yeah.
It's homogeneous. Yeah. So what is the simple vector? It's flat space. So let's start from quantum flat space as the simplest beginning. Okay? And already there, the subject is structure. Whereas the previous presentation was saying the simplest object is. Right, it's the empty space, which is pretty much wrong, but it's how that works with it. Right? So the new vector is more like saying, well, it's really clearly fast. What is the homogeneous space? It's only that if you know a point, you know everything. Right? And that's only one point. Right? So that's this idea that you could even if it's big, it's very
simple. But this point of view doesn't get connected radius.
Well, because it's not as far as my sense. Maybe we're having too much of a conversation on the TV, but it is to say it's not, from my understanding, it's not as far as it looks. The frameworks look very different, but if my strategy would be if you looked at the finite boundary with negative cosmological constant and thought about the structure on the boundary and the boundary conditions, you could make the correspondence with other work in ADS-CFT. And 2+1, there's a lot of evidence for that, and 2+1 is not a dimension that is that much studied normally. And unfortunately, these methods we haven't looked at 4+1, which is the one that gives a lot of confidence.
But
it's a wrong way.
The main question is, what the ADS-CFT does
is that it takes a very, very large boundary, that there's an infinite number of data. And then the assumption slash proof is that if you do that, then you don't have to deal with quantum space time. You can deal with classical space time,
right.
And somehow you avoid the issue. So ADS-CFT goes around trying to
deal,
you know, by going to infinity and going to a very large space, you can now be in the classical setting. And then maybe from this classical try to go back inside.
It's a step towards formulating at least reasonable boundary data, which at least you could say that at finite boundary you have something which looks approximately like.
Yeah, maybe I can just say something that I think what would be really nice when one wants to discuss comparison between approaches is to agree on some simple observables that we believe are good observables in gravity. So in gravity, many things are just a question of taste, whether we want to describe as sums over geometries or not, because we don't have local observables in gravity, right? So if you put it in a box, it makes sense to ask, if I put things at particular points of the box, what happens? What's the outcome of an experiment? Or if we are in flat space, if I scatter 4 gravitons, what's the probability outcome? And that quantity, what is happening inside and all this fairy tale that we tell and what's the precise description, okay, it's irrelevant. But then if we could compare observables and see, well, so what's the difference? I mean, what are the properties of your scattering amplitude compared to my scattering amplitude? And do they both look physical or not? Because in the end, those are the good observables in gravity. So I think perhaps doesn't matter which theory, but I think all theories we can put in a box and then compute boundary observables that are well defined in gravity and we can compare.
Yeah. No. Here, the setup. You know, you have a boundary. You can basically put observables on the boundary.
I think it's better to compare quantities than to compare philosophies and stories of what is happening.
This is what you should think about. You talk about the box and boundary data. What she maybe was emphasizing is that if you have box inside, you cannot assume that one of the boundary data is a classical dimension. So you have to replace.
Box inside is already harder. It's already. Let's understand that question later. But first, the simplest one is. You have a big box and you put things outside at some point.
No, you can't.
So,
that's
so
in
this
or flat space. Or flat space. If people prefer flat space, let's send gravity from infinity and have them scatter and measure. No?
The simplest box is different. I love the way you started, but then the simplest box is different for different approaches for technical reasons. And so we have to go one step further and seek the box that we can all say something about. I think we should do that. I think it's worth to do that. You want the box
asymptotic and infinity. I want either ADS or flat space or some other simple space time.
What
sort of the crack operating spaces?
So for
I want to just have some experiments.
For Bianca, a piece of quantum flat space is very simple. For me, you know, the whole universe is very simple. And for you, ADS, the infinity is very simple.
But if we can, for example, compute in some approach, scattering of gravitons in flat space, right? For which we know the classical limit, and then we can start studying deviations from this and see how different theories deviate.
That's one simplicity. It's all about.
Okay. Anyway, it was a proposal.
We have an answer, which is kind of. It's also for one simplex, we have kind of the transition amplitude.
Because nobody's ever
done
to do that experiment.
Yeah, no, gravitons in.
Nobody's ever done to do that experiment, so it's not really.
A scattering graviton?
Never.
Well, but those are the simplest ones. But there are other questions we can ask. Take a box.
It's simple.
But
compute a partition function. Compute the entropy of a black hole by studying the partition function.
Yeah.
Put a black hole in a box and study.
Boundary.
I'm just saying. Think
no, about no, it. No, no, like we have the simplest thing for us is the simplex.
Okay, but the simplex. There are many models of simplices, and the test of whether they are describing something to do with gravity is by computing something physical and seeing if the results give us a good idea.
Physical is flat space.
You mean different
is
things.
Idea.
Okay. Okay.
When
simplest
when
choice.
When I say physical, I mean the universe. When you say physical, you don't.
Why not? What am I done? I can't begin so much.
Scattering,
I think it's a cultural
difference.
Well,
ADS
well,
boundary condition.
We can scatter things at LHC, then flat.
Yeah.
The universe is not flat.
Asymptotically, ADS is definitely
maybe
so,
maybe it's
so,
important to connect a few things by explaining what the hesitancy about saying yes to scattering ground time. It has to do with the Feder-Poincaré invariance and Lorentz invariance, which is because what's interesting about scattering gravitons, of course, is transponder gravitons, which is classical general relativity can take care of the scattering of low energy gravitons. And the different hypotheses, physical hypotheses, disagree about whether there are transponder gravitons, whether they correspond to representations of the Lorentz or Poincaré group, whether they correspond instead to deformed representations or representations of deformed algebra. And so I agree strongly that scattering of gravitons is important, but there are physical hypotheses which distinguish different possibilities. For example, if there is a universal cutoff, universal observer independent cutoff, there are no transponding gravitons for any observer, and then it's going to be very different than an approach based on hypotheses which assumes Poincaré invariance. So there are physical differences, and they are important to talk about.
I see. Yeah. My hope is that this really connects most easily to homogeneous vacuum and cosmology, actually.
Let's see if somebody
some
else
drop out. Yeah, I wanted to ask for a while, just a technical question, and then make a kind of hopefully provocative general statement or question. But I can't resist now, because of this previous discussion, just pointing out there's a real cultural difference here, and it's a sociological difference. People who grew up thinking quantum field theory in flat space and LHC or something like that as the archetypical, the canonical kind of physical experiment. And there's the people who come out of the gravity background who think of curved space, who think that the continuum limit that people want to take in flat space is probably not relevant because it's ignoring the fine structure, you know, the gravitational structure on very small scales. And that, as Laurent was saying, what's simple to one is not simple to the other. We look at scattering of gravitons and we say, when will you ever do it? But we also say, how does that relate to the really interesting questions? What is that going to tell us about the early universe and the things that we can now observe related to the early universe? The thing that sets the initial conditions for the fluctuation, you know, for the primordial fluctuations. It really is a different mindset. Maybe one thing that this can do is help to make a meeting. But that is the most likely application, field of application in the short run for quantum gravity.
I cannot look the back at that. Put 10 to the minus 120 and that's there at it. I do what I can.
But I'd like to ask my technical question, if possible. Because when you, in your A, when you...
I realize very much.
There's fundamentalism about culture. I mean, I was trained as a particle physicist and didn't have any connection with this weird relativity world until somewhat after my PhD. And I think that people are much more interesting than can be put in single boxes about whether you were trained as a particle physicist or a relativist. But I appreciate this. Anyway, ask your technical.
When you in question A, in point A, when you say diffeomorphism invariance, are you talking about spatial diffeomorphism invariance or space-time? It looked to me like you were talking about spatial.
A was spatial
really
and
spatial.
C was space-time.
C was space-time, okay.
C was a gluing property.
So that's related to John's question. When you say you come to the Lorentzian signature, do you need to have, then your boundary may have time like, even like an ADS. So you need to modify this representation to handle time like boundaries or possible null boundaries.
Yeah, I think like time like can be done and space like can be done and null, it's maybe a different question.
But that's why technique are you then?
I put it here in the Euclidean setting because that's much so far much easier, and you can already ask all this question about whether such a quantum field theory exists which has this gluing property in an Euclidean setting. And indeed there are many questions which come up with causal structure and especially null boundaries where it might not happen that, I mean, classically it seems that already this gluing doesn't work with null boundaries. So, and in really simple cases. it's not hard in the sense that you can add matter, but it will basically always be at this a priori approximate level, and the point is to get the full consistent amplitudes. But full consistent amplitudes means that you then also get matter automatically with the running beta function.
So I don't understand very well point B when you say that this gluing or the partition function can solve the Hamiltonian, right?
Yeah, so that was more, it was more a statement than an explanation, but it's really it ultimately comes from the following thing is that that indeed if you think I give you more the finite version because it's easier to explain. And that is that this partition function actually acts as a projector. And this property is easy to explain because
if you take basically here the universe at a certain time and here's the universe at a certain time, then if you think about a path integral description and the gluing property is says that gluing the thing, you should again get the transition amplitude from here to here if you glue about all possibilities here. both these things, however, already give you the partition function from here to here. And the point is that you can already do that with a relativistic particle or with an easy particle. The point is that you don't specify this to be fixed distance. This can be anything. This is really the transition amplitude from this universe to this universe, where you don't say anything about the time interval. And so if you glue to that, it's basically that you don't say anything about the time interval. So basically, doing this means that you indeed take Z is equal to Z composed with Z, where composition really means it's gluing. And so Z itself has to act as a projector. And
does that help?
But
the projector is infinitesimally is.
It's a projector onto solutions of constraints.
So
that's the dimensions of the constraints.
Yeah, so you get actually the. If you take that kind of. you can imagine something like 1 minus H. Actually, that condensed matter people, for them, it's exactly the same. It's the same thing. It's actually they even identify the Hamiltonian with the projector.
okay, John, question, and Raphael for that.
Yeah. But this also, this is always kind of has something to do with full diffeomorphism invariance. So it's something which you would not get in the Java Lifshitz. And,
I have some comments to make, which lead me to a question. Since this session deals with quantum gravity. Now, quantum gravity has been around for over 7 decades. I can go back to citing papers in the 50s. So we tried to unify the two so-called pillars of modern physics, relativity and quantum physics. By the way, Einstein was opposed to quantizing gravity. Anyway, so ultimately in physics, you have to have experiment to decide whether you have the right theory. There are no quantum gravity data.
No. There are quantum gravity data. There is very good data about breaking of Lorentz invariants at the Planck scale.
Yeah, but how do you know quantum gravity violates Lorentz?
No. Different theories will make different predictions, and in fact, there is order one data about breaking bounds on breaking Lorentz invariants at the Planck scale from astrophysical data. So you can't keep saying over and over again. You can't keep saying over and over again there's no quantum gravity data. There's good quantum gravity data, and it refutes lots of ideas and lots of proposals that were made about the way the Lorentz.
But there are many other proposals that do not violate the Lorentz. I would like to know how we know in the end that you have the right quantum gravity theory. There are so many of them. How do I know that I've got the right one?
No,
there's no.
You can say we have a kind of none which would be fully satisfactory. And I gave you a list of things which I want to have be satisfied, which is a semi-classical limit and having this gluing property. And so the one data point we have is that this world exists, so means getting the semi-classical limit right. And that's where still most approaches have to deliver.
The general relativity, the bending of light, is determined experimentally to 0.02%. by VLBI measurements. And that is the way you test the theory in sources. It may not be, we don't have to be tested for galaxies or clusters.
I,
there's no experiment that can...
John Elway disagrees with you. We all would love to have experimental tests. No, we keep saying this. Nobody disagrees. Everybody agrees that ultimately the experiment is the test of the theory. But meanwhile, we have two experiments. One, they do refute some theories. And two, what Bianca said has to be taken into account. There is no, if you write down what a quantum theory of gravity should reasonably do, different people get different lists. But there's no theory that satisfies all the conditions on anybody's list. So we have work to do. But nobody disagrees that the end of that work is predict experiments that can be, by which your theory can be checked or falsified.
We can't detect gravitons. Gravitons play a fundamental role in what it
does. No, I mean, the most promising thing is, again, to get the predictions for cosmology.
BICEP 2 was a possible way to see quantum gravity fluctuations, but that was covered with dust. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
So, how did we ever decide? I have a theory of quantum gravity, like everybody else, non-local quantum gravity, which does not violate Lorentzian theory. How can I test it? I can calculate scattering amplitudes, but there's no way to test it.
Calculate dark energy.
Yeah, I think you can.
Calculate dark energy. Even before testing it, the Vega is proposing is to have at least one consistent
theory. Consistency, my theory is consistent. Everybody's theory is consistent. As Aaron first said,
no,
it's not bringing
the. I say, like, I mean, from our viewpoint, you know, we spin foam starts with certain techniques. We still have to show that we get semi-classical. I mean, that we have kind of a suitable large scale limit for more complex boundary data than the simplex. Like causal sets, Raphael would agree. It's also hasn't really shown that you get large scale space times. Causal dynamical triangulations has kind of gotten smooth manifolds. Whether it gives you Einstein gravity is a different question. So it's that we learned, and it's indeed that we learned in the last 70 years, we learned a lot about all the naive mistakes you can do and what you have to do better. And like, you know, for instance, the diffeomorphism invariant representation of the Hilbert space is from the 90s. It's basically that indeed we are so much used to doing quantum field theory with this approximate with the asymptotic boundary data where we can do calculations. Mm-hmm. And indeed, but this stuff about using asymptotic data and using already requires basically the answer to the question I'm asking here, because then you already know what is vacuum, what are nice, convenient ways to do calculations, what are basically your almost disentangled degrees of freedom, because that's kind of the scattering amplitude, the graviton. You know, that's kind of something, degree of freedom at asymptotic infinity, which is very far, far, far away. Now in full quantum gravity is basically the question, how do you express that something is very far, far, far away? That is kind of underlying quantum fluctuations. It's, for me, it's part of the question, how do you formulate that? You know, how do you formulate a graviton? and so there was a long way to do physics in this background independent way. It has, and there has been indeed, you know, lots of progress in kind of coming to this question, okay, we can take TQFTs with defects. And indeed, I think the next interesting question, can we do more? And that is a very precise question where getting the answer, if it's yes, it will be a very interesting structure. Basically, even TQFTs with defects, they are just really understood, you know, right now in kind of depths and condensed matter and before in mathematics. And it's not simple stuff.
I think more broadly there's a very optimistic answer, which is that, I mean, quantum gravity, personally I agree that it's going to be, you know, conceptual, it's going to be a revolution akin to the one that happened with quantum mechanics. And you know, if you try to talk about what will happen before quantum mechanics, you just say it's very small. There's no way you can foresee the quantum Hall effect, like something which is a microscopic effect. So the existence of quantum mechanics lead to the possibility and the understanding of it and the manipulation of it leads to the possibility of experimental possibility that are impossible to foresee before you have the conceptual theory. Because all you can do before the conceptual theory is to say H bar is small and that's it. But you know, today we have like, you know, the quantum Hall effect, the new one half effect, the quantum Hall effect, this is a fundamentally quantum object, H bar is in your face. It's
quantum gravity is contentious physics. It's so you have an experiment.
You see what I'm saying?
I feel like we've kept people here a long time. I promise that that was the last of the question. But maybe Raphael, can you very quickly provoke and I propose we all go down to pub night and have a drink and respond to Raphael then.
We can discuss it over something at pub and get from the pub, but now the provocative question is, why do you want to take the continuum limit at all? I could make an argument.
I didn't talk so. There's a continuum limit.
Well, you sounded like you wanted to take a continuum limit. You wanted to allow arbitrary continuous data on the boundary, which is very close.
Arbitrary complex data.
Well, okay, then I change
that property. You want the gluing property.
I want the gluing, yeah.
So she wants the gluing property, whether the data could be discrete, Steve, but it's kind of out.
I mean,
so I should say, do you want to take a limit? My argument would be that if you do it, you will lose some essential physics, and you will lose either quantum field theory or you'll lose gravity. So. I would claim, which I can describe in a pub, why.
No,
if you believe that the nature is fundamentally discrete and that the quantum length is a fundamental discretization,
yes.
Then taking the continuum limit is taking L quantum to zero, which is taking either H bar to zero. That is incorrect.
I'm not taking this limit.
That's not what you meant.
And so then if you're not taking that limit, can you explain? Yeah, then please. That's good.
I mean, it's
but
basically
then,
indeed a question, what happens if you go to more and more complex boundary data? Is there a simplification which happens? I mean, is there a decoupling which happens in some sense? Or do we have to go to the end? Is there a fixed point? Is there a conformal symmetry? I didn't really answer this. I mean, I didn't really say something, you know. I mean, there's basically two different assumptions. One is you go in this limit to something like a topological quantum field theory, which would not really go into continuum limit because it would be topological quantum field theory where you still have the defect structure, but that would be, you know.
But then you
and
see
the other
if you're
thing
not
is
taking a continuum limit, then there's no reason for your C, I think.
For what?
Well, maybe we should. You don't want the triangulation invariant.
Let's stop it here. I see a hand, and I'd love to call you, but I feel everybody in the room is getting ready to go. So let's save that for the other. Thank you, speakers.